Welcome to Chuck Chat. I'm your host, Chuck Tomasi. Thanks for downloading and listening to this show. This is a segment I call Podcaster Profiles. The purpose is to talk to other podcasters and find out a little bit more about the person behind the microphone on some of your favorite podcasts and expose you to some podcasts you might not otherwise have known about. This week, I interview Jeff Bishop from the Desert Skies podcast. I first heard about Jeff's show when he applied to techpodcast.com as a member. I was intrigued to find out that Jeff is blind and even more intrigued on how he uses the computer every day. Over the past few weeks, I've been working with Jeff. Jeff has been very helpful even to my site, noting that some of my image tags didn't have alt tags on them. And just, it's been real fun working with Jeff over the last couple of weeks. So, let's get into it. Welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Thanks, Chuck.
First of all, tell the listener a little bit about the Desert Skies podcast and what it's all about.
The Desert Skies podcast is a tech podcast. Obviously, it's part of the techpodcast.com network. And it mainly focuses on mainstream technology, but with a little bit of a twist toward accessibility. I'm a blind podcaster, and the topics will generally focus around areas relating to screen reading technology, although not necessarily. Right now, actually, we're focusing quite a bit on podcasting.
Okay. Where are you physically?
I'm in Tucson, Arizona.
And it's hot.
It's very, very hot here, yes. Like 110 today.
How much time do you spend producing the Desert Skies podcast?
I try to do two different types of shows per week. The first one, during the middle of the week, I try to do an interview. And then the weekend shows, I traditionally do tech news. So the tech news shows, it takes me quite a bit of time because I want to go through and get reorganized, get the show notes together. I probably spend 2 to 3 hours preparing that. And then it actually takes me about an hour, hour and a half to actually produce the show, and then another hour or so of post-production.
How long is the show duration typically?
I try to keep it under an hour.
Okay.
Now, my last one was a little bit longer because we were covering some brand new technology that came out for iTunes 4.9. But traditionally, you'll find them to be definitely under an hour, probably more so between the 40 and 50 minute mark.
What do you do when you're not producing the Desert Skies podcast? I know it takes a lot of time, but what revolves around your life outside of that world?
Well, I work as a computer programmer for the University of Arizona, so that's what keeps me busy at work. I'm an amateur radio operator, and so I like delving in that when I can. And I'm pretty busy with my family. I have my wife and two kids, and so that keeps me pretty busy. And also with church and all kinds of other things. So there's plenty of things to go around.
A very full and rich life.
That's right, yes.
Getting back to the programming stuff, what sort of languages do you program in?
Well, I mainly work in the Microsoft technology area. So like the projects that we're working on right now, we're working on the new version of our student information system. It's written in all Microsoft-based technologies. We're using XML and COM and .NET, so and SQL Server, and we had to interface to the old legacy system at the university, which is mainframe based. So we have to write interfaces to that, and so yeah, that's pretty much where I've landed technically.
What do you do for fun besides podcasting?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time on the computer. My wife thinks I married the computer and not her. But, I really love swimming. And since it's so hot here, we tend to do a lot of that here in the summer. And I enjoy listening to music. And we don't spend a lot of time outdoors except for swimming because it's just way too hot in the summertime.
Sure.
But in the fall and in the spring, we definitely like to get out and do things outside with the kids and that kind of thing. We have a lot of fun doing that, especially when it's cooler.
How old are the kids?
Let's see. David is 14 and Brian is 12.
Oh, getting up there. You're going to be done pretty soon.
Yeah, done pretty soon. Yeah, although I think they'll probably stick around for a while, especially they'll probably be going to the University of Arizona since I work there. So they'll probably stay at home. And
once a parent, always a parent.
Yeah, that's right. That's all right, though.
Now, do you consider yourself a geek?
Yes, very much so. Everything in my life centers around technology in some way, shape, or form. Almost too much. My wife thinks I need to get away from computers more, but yeah, I tend to carry many gadgets with me. In fact, I bought an Arcos to do sound seeing tours.
Oh, really?
And so, actually, on jeffbishop.net, which is where the website it is for my podcasts, you can go there and listen. We did a Disneyland trip, and we podcasted the Disneyland trip. And so that was kind of fun. We had Brian describing things around us, and we took the Arcos on rides. And so even my vacations centered around technology. I'd come back to the hotel, get on the laptop, upload the content, and... Although I only did that one night because I'll tell you right now, dial-up, that was very, very evil.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I know what you're talking about. You get used to broadband, and anytime it's anything less, it really starts to feel painful.
Oh, it was more than painful. I think it was getting about 4K per second uploads. And when you had, you know, a 25 meg file, that just had to stop. So what I did was went ahead and produced a lot of the content on my trip and then took it home and copied the files from the Arcos and did all the editing and put it up on the website. So that was a lot of fun. We actually got a significant amount of response from that. In fact, in the month of June, I get 30 gig of bandwidth per month, and I exceeded that by about 20.
Oops.
Yeah, and that was mainly by the middle of the month. So I had to do something about my bandwidth problems relatively quickly, or else I was going to be in serious trouble.
You think the wife is mad at you spending too much time.
Oh, yeah. Well, we sort of hid that one from her, but...
What's this extra $100?
Actually, my hosting provider was really good about that. He basically said, don't do it again. So we worked out an arrangement, and now I'm over on Libsyn.
Yay!
Thank God for Libsyn.
Yeah, I wonder how long they'll be able to hold that offer up now that iTunes is out.
Yes, I know. Yeah, they've been kind of rough the last few days.
It's holding up, though. It's holding up.
Yeah, it sure is. It's amazing, isn't it?
I'm going to steal a question from another podcaster, but I like this question. I don't like to take other people's materials. Okay, I do when it's good. But what was your first computer?
Well, I started with a VIC-20. And the interesting thing about that is that back then, we really didn't have a lot of technology that would allow the computer to talk.
Hmm.
So we went down to Radio Shack, and the guy says, oh, yeah, well, this computer can talk. So we got it home, and now you must understand, my dad is a jack of all trades, but technically... not very good at all, and it's one of those things where you get a lot of phone calls from family members, and sometimes they can be rather difficult as far as tech support. But so it was really a challenge, and that didn't work out too well. Now, I actually started, before I actually owned a computer, working on a TI-99/4A.
Okay.
Doing a little bit of programming, and actually we wrote an application to send the results of the screen in Morse code on the TI-99/4A.
Oh.
So that was kind of fun, yeah. And so then, I bought a Commodore 64, and that was because at the time there was a gentleman by the name of Eric Bowman who actually produced a screen reader for Windows called TinyTalk, and he actually produced one for the Commodore, and that's what I used for years. I went from the Commodore 64 to the 128.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I learned how to do all my programming. I was about 11 or 12 years old at that time. And so, you know, I played all the Infocom text adventure games that kept me up all night long, and, you know, Zork and all, you know, all the Zork stuff and Wishbringer and all those fun things. And so I actually did that for a number of years, learned BASIC really well that way, delved into assembly language a little bit. I actually had to do that because we had to get the screen reader to be able to move its memory locations. so that some other applications would run. There was a program written by David Lovelock called David's Directory Designer, and it required that the screen reader had to be moved to different memory locations. So a friend of mine and I spent quite a bit of time actually rewriting and reassembling the screen reader to be able to make that happen.
Well, that's a pretty impressive endeavor.
Yeah, it was kind of fun, and really the speech quality was simply amazing. We used a speaker that came out of a car stereo, and it was hooked up to this little metal box, which is basically the voice synthesizer, and it plugged into the port on the back of the Commodore. I forget what they called those ports. It wasn't a serial port, I don't think.
Yeah, it was some. I thought it was something generic like I/O port or.
Yeah, I don't remember the name. It eludes me at the moment, but yeah, it was fun and really had a great time. And that's what really got me hooked. And then when I started college, I used a Braille display. At that time, the Braille display was about $12,000, and I'd go to college and hook it up to the mainframe. and actually, so all it what really was basically a dumb terminal with some programming capability. You could actually write in Forth, which was a language developed for the space industry for telescopes.
Mm-hmm.
And you could write in this Forth programming language. The manuals for it took up like an entire shelf in my bedroom.
Oh my goodness!
And then I moved to the PC and. You know, there you go.
How did you first hear about podcasting?
Wow. Well, you know, the whole concept of podcasting, a lot of us have been doing, not so much myself, but a number of people have been doing it. I think the first time I really heard about it was from Marlena, actually, because she was getting into it from... getting her shows podcasted as well so that others can get them and stream them outside of a project that we're involved with called ACB Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, who didn't hear of Adam Curry?
Right,
and
right.
So, you know, and I knew that he was really kind of involved with it, but I really didn't get that technically involved with it until around March or so. I started really looking into it. And so I was pretty young then, but... yeah, that's kind of when I started with it.
What was your first impression?
Well, there was a lot of really great shows out there and a lot of really great content being produced. And I was very, very excited about it because, you know, it was an opportunity for people to be able to go out and listen to a lot of very creative ideas and you know, even people doing kind of the same types of things, talking about, you know, the same types of news stories. You really found it to be even kind of fun listening to, you know, like your show, for example. And then you go over and listen to Mike's tech show.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a different total spin on things. And so I was really intrigued by it, and it really got me kind of excited. Really the thing that kicked it off for me, though, was this whole idea of sound seeing tours. Because we've been doing it for a long, long time, and... in reference to, you know, people doing recordings out in the field and then, you know, bringing them back and, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it really got me excited about it because, you know, I was thinking, wow, you know, now everyone's doing this and the content is readily available and they have to produce it so that everybody can listen to it. It's an audio medium. There's no visual aspect to it.
Right.
And it's just, that's kind of really what got me hooked, honestly, was... You know, I'm a huge old-time radio fan. In fact, that's what I tend to do on Sunday nights is listen to a lot of old-time radio shows. And so this really got me hooked in reference to a modern, you know, old-time radio type feel to it, whether it be news stories or just listening to, you know, family interactions or even technical, you know, type subjects. So I think that's one reason why the blind community has really latched onto this is because it is such an audio medium. You know, there's not really a visual, you know, aspect to it. People are having to adapt to thinking in an audio realm, not so much in a visual one.
I know it certainly has opened up my ears to the community. I was, like I said, I was up at 4 a.m. this morning because we had a thunderstorm move through, and I opened up the window and I could hear the thunderstorm, the rain, At one point, the rain tapered off. There were birds going on. Like, there's just a wealth of audio out there, and you don't really hear it until you start to record it, or you have to think in that mode. You know, there goes a bus driving by. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have given it a second thought before, but it's a very fascinating thing to open up to.
One of the things that was really neat, and I wish he would have completed them before we left for our Disney trip, was the Three Ring podcast. He did a sound seeing tour of Disney. He basically walked the entire Disney, you know, area in California, and talked all about it, you know, what he saw, and, you know, where would you go shopping. And that's kind of what got my wife hooked on it. You know, we listened to them before we left, and then we re-listened to them in the car. And especially the stereo, you know, the whole stereo separation thing with these stereo mics, mm-hmm. that adds such, you know, just a really, really nice feel to shows. It's just really, really nice.
Oh, now you've got me. I'm really close to getting a portable recording device other than my camcorder, because that just lends more labor to the recording process, extract the audio and yada, yada, yada. But we've got a Disney World trip coming up to Florida at the end of October, and I'm considering doing that. Now, bandwidth is another issue. We talked about dial-up being painful before, but I'll probably find a Starbucks or something and buy some bandwidth dollars and upload shows. But I really want to do that. I want to get some audio from the parks, from the rides, that sort of thing.
I took my Arcos on rides and recorded us riding on the rides and all of that. So it was really kind of fun. And the reason I went with the Arcos is because rockbox.org has software that you can load on the Arcos to make them talk. So it makes it fully accessible. I want to get into the iRiver, and there's work going on right now from the Rockbox group to make the iRivers accessible, because they're so much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It really would be a nice way to do sound seeing tours.
That's what I'm thinking too. Just a nice portable. There's movement on the iPod to do that, but the iRiver has an advantage that you can hear what's being recorded. It's got an in and an out rather than just an in. And the iPod that my wife has, the fourth generation, doesn't support iPod Linux yet, or at least not recording on it. So I'm leaning towards the iRiver at this point, and probably by the time this recording hits the net, I'll have something in my hands, hopefully, because I've got a lot of events coming up this summer that I'm just dying to record and don't want to go through the pain and suffering of all the labor involved.
Yeah, they don't make the Arcos units anymore, at least the kind that we need to be able to get Rockbox on. And the only real issue that I had with it was that it only has a line in. It doesn't have a microphone,
mm-hmm.
You know, plug. So you have to get a, you know, pre-amplified mic, and you just can't pick up, you know, a mic and make it work, because you're not going to get the audio into the unit. But so that was my only complaint about it.
Now, when you first got the idea, I want to do my own podcast, how long did it take to go from that light bulb going on to the time your first show was on the net, published, being downloaded, and what were some of the challenges you met along that period?
Well, I think the I was already doing a lot of audio type work because of my work with ACB Radio. ACB Radio is a radio station where a bunch of blind people can broadcast at. And there's two channels. There's mainstream and then there's interactive.
Mm-hmm.
And interactive is more like, you know, just like a DJ type, you know, playing music and that type of thing. And then the mainstream channel is more like talk or, you know, tech type topics. So I was already producing content for a technology program called Main Menu, which appears on the mainstream side of acbradio.org. And so I was already really involved with, you know, doing the whole recording thing. My challenge was, you know, getting it out there on my blog, because I already had a blog, but I really hadn't used it much, and figuring out, you know, what host did I want to go with that was going to be reliable. It was more of just, you know, that type of work. I already had the domains, you know, purchased them from GoDaddy.com. And so it was just a matter of, you know, who do I want to go with? What kind of bandwidth? Those were really the main issues that I had to deal with. And then, of course, everything went fine for the latter part of April and May. And then when June hit, That really freaked me out because I was watching the numbers and watching the bandwidth just getting eaten alive. So that's kind of when I started to panic a little bit because I thought, wow, this is really real. And so I had to do something relatively quickly, and luckily there were some technical solutions to that. But so really it wasn't too difficult for me to kind of jump in. It probably took me kind of once I decided what I wanted to do and how I wanted to format the show and things like that. I did it in a weekend, since I had already done some audio work. The bigger issue was determining the realization that, hey, you know what, people are actually listening to this stuff. That's sort of when it sort of freaked me out, and I had to really kind of decide to make some technical changes in audio as well as in bandwidth.
Now, what software are you using? Tell me a little bit about your setup.
Well, I use two different screen readers, kind of depending on the applications that I'm doing. I either use WindowEyes from GW Micro or JAWS for Windows from Freedom Scientific. I'm running on a Windows XP Pro machine. I was using Goldwave at the beginning. Mm-hmm. to produce my shows, but I wanted to have a little better ability to do sound reduction and cleaning up of noise and that type of thing, and so I went ahead and bought SoundForge, and that's what I'm using now. And I'm looking at right now, I don't own a mixer, but I'm looking at that. And so there's some areas on the audio side of things that I need to definitely work on, but it's sounding okay, I think.
It's an evolving process, and if the content is there and people are listening, you might get an occasional person that says, you got a little bit of hiss, or normalize or something. But
exactly,
that comes later.
I just put up a new podcast this weekend on the new iTunes support for JAWS for Windows, and we were recording with Skype, and I either had one or two problems with Skype. One either being huge latency problems where the mic audio comes in well before the actual speaker audio, mm-hmm. the other person's audio, or distortion. And I think the only solution to this is going to be to use two machines, kind of like what you're doing. But so that's my only real big hurdle at the moment.
Yeah, that will help the latency, but there's still going to be a latency that's involved with voice over IP. Yep. And I'm rethinking some of the strategies to fix that, possibly recording it as two different tracks, two different files that I can then blend together and get the timing just right, so there isn't that latency. Otherwise, you got to spend a lot of time doing editing and cutting out those quarter-second or half-second blank spots and work it that way. But the optimal way is to have two separate tracks that you can blend together, but Skype is better than nothing.
Well, there are other alternatives, and actually they're not bad. You could use a Ventrilo server and actually connect people that way, where you could do, conferences and stuff like that, and they have the ability to record.
Hmm. I'll have to look into that.
So that's another option, and the quality is actually pretty... the quality is actually not bad. And then there's another product called iVocalize. And we actually use that over on ourplace.acbradio.org, and the quality is very, very good. In fact, that client actually has recording capability built right into it, and the quality is quite good. I mean, you don't need 320-bit audio for speech.
Right.
Even 64K is more than sufficient, really. So, those are a couple of other options that maybe people want to look at. The nice thing about Skype is everybody has it,
right? The price is right,
exactly. And these other things are, although these other things are free as well. Well, at least the clients are. The servers are not. But although I think Ventrilo server is free, but iVocalize is not. You have to pay for the server for that. But so those are a couple of other things. The only drawback, of course, is that you'd have to get that person to install that specific client.
Sure. There's a platform thing. I don't know if you're aware, but periodically we have regular project update meetings and status meetings at techpodcast.com. We're getting a little off track here, but we're looking at a way to get all the Mac and Windows users and everybody participating in this group conference. And so far, we're having a hard time finding cross-platform solutions that'll do that, other than, of course, picking up the handset and dialing a landline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the phone works. Yeah.
But then everybody's meter is going ka-ching, 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 and you get a group of techies together on tech projects, and it's anything but succinct and short. These meetings can really last.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Now,
right.
You are a family man.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What does your wife and kids think about you doing podcasting?
They want to get another room in the house. because I kicked them out of the room. We share a room here, which is the computer room, and so we have all the computers and technology in one room. And believe me, it really needs to be two or three rooms in this house, as much stuff as I have. So that's really their only complaint. They like the idea, and Brian really, if you go listen to the podcast, Brian really got into it. He really enjoyed actually doing the whole sound seeing thing. And so that's really the only real complaint is, in fact, my son is like, when can I get on the computer this morning? yeah. So it's that's the really only complaint. That being my wife wants to use the computer more often than she gets to. So there's that, too. But that's the typical problem.
I have the same situation. I sit here with the family's other two computers, and they can... If they want to sit quietly and play, that's fine. The girls will walk up to the iMac G4, and I'll make them put on headphones so in case I need to record.
I tried doing that, but then you get keyboard clicks, and you know,
I can live with that.
My son types. Brian types about 110 words a minute. He's been on computers since he's about six, and so you know, when he types, he goes to town, and it really comes in clear. You know, here over the mic. So,
well, there's a certain amount of real life that has to go into a podcast too, like this creaky bench that I'm sitting on.
Exactly. Sure.
Now, if somebody told you a year ago that you would be doing these podcasts and putting things out on the internet and hundreds of people listening to them, what would you have thought or said to them at that time?
I'm sorry, Chuck. I got interrupted there.
Oh, that's all right. Sure, question? We'll just cut that part out too. If so, if
wait, hold on one second. My wife is.
Yep.
Carrie.
If somebody told you a year ago that you would be doing this, producing shows, putting them on the internet, hundreds of people listening and downloading to them, what would you have thought or said to them at that time?
I think I would have told them they were crazy. I had been doing a little bit of broadcasting work a year ago, but to be able to think that it would actually be something that, you know, where hundreds of people would be listening to it, I really didn't think that would be something that would even be feasibly possible. And it really was very overwhelming, actually, in the month of June to really realize that, oh my God, not, you know, it's just not my family and, you know, a couple of friends at work listening to this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's real. You know, and that's really kind of when it hit me that, you know, man, if I miss a show, I get email. You know, if it's a day late, people are like, "What the heck's going on? Where's your show?
Are you okay?"
Yeah, exactly. it's pretty amazing to me that you know you build up a following of people, and you know if you're not there on the day you stay, you're going to be there. Then you know that's why I'm having to post often. Like if I'm a day late, because we had to do a lot of work this weekend for our upgrade for our new student information system at the university, and the show for Saturday was a day late, so I put up information up on the blog saying, "Don't worry, we're fine. You know, everything will be there on." And I actually said the 4th, that way giving myself a day in case all heck broke loose at the office. Because, you know, technical things, you know, you
right.
never know. Actually, we were able to get it up there yesterday. But, yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing stuff. And if you were to ask me what would things be like in a year from now, there's no way I could even tell you.
Not a guess.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I just don't know. I'm hoping I'm doing pretty much the same thing. I'm hoping that I'll have a lot better, you know, equipment, obviously, to be able to work with. But who knows where this is going to go for everybody. You know, as more and more people are listening, you know, what is it truly going to mean for podcasters? I'm not sure.
What would you say to someone who is thinking of getting started?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you want to make sure that you're having fun. If you're finding out that it's becoming a struggle for you, then stop, because it's not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't just sit down and just be able to have fun doing what you love to do, then you don't want to be a podcaster, because it is an awful lot of work. A friend of mine was producing some work for Main Menu for us later, for the latter part of July, and he called me on Skype last night and he goes, "Man, you know, this is really, really hard work." I said, "Yes, it is. It's very hard work, you know, to be able to produce, you know, a really good product." But it doesn't need to be, you know, real complex. If you just want to podcast about your family, you know, that type of thing, then go for it. You know, all you really need is, of course, you know, your microphone, your computer, and go to town.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to, you know, be a lot more technical about it, then you can. But make sure the really important thing is have fun doing it. Because if you're not having fun doing it, and if it comes laborious and painful for you, then you obviously don't want to be doing it. But I think that's the real key thing.
Good advice. Good advice. What podcasts do you listen to on a regular basis?
Well, I listen to a lot of the podcasts on the Tech Podcast Network, mm-hmm. because it just kind of fits my, you know, geekiness. I like listening to Adam Curry's Daily Source Code, mainly just to keep up on, you know, what's happening in the podcast realm. I like listening to, there's a lot of old-time radio podcasts out there now, and I really do enjoy those. And then I tend to listen to a lot of the podcasts that are a lot of the people who are on the blind casting list produce, for a couple of reasons. One, because I like a lot of them, and secondly, because 9 times out of 10, they'll come back to me and ask questions or want feedback, so... it keeps me busy. I have about 178 podcasts in my iPodder client.
Oh my goodness!
And I don't listen to all of them, obviously, but I'll skim a lot of them. Is what I tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them don't produce content every week either.
Right.
So it's not too bad. Like I have 60 there right now that are queued up, ready to go. But and again, I'll skim a lot of them, but I mainly focus on tech, you know, type topics, because that's kind of where my love is. And and I do like the Catholic Insider. I didn't really think I'd really like that podcast. I mean, I'm not Catholic or anything, but mm-hmm. he's got me hooked. That is a wonderful podcast, especially if you're into sound seeing tours. He does just a tremendous job of describing things and. You know, plus he's kind of geeky himself, and he took his equipment into the theater and went and watched Star Wars, and so that was kind of fun.
Sounds a little illicit.
Yeah, well, he didn't record it. He just, you know, he just took it in there, and they have intermissions there, and you know, between the, you know, the half point of the show, and so he would, you know, record, wow, you know, the first half of the movie was really, really great, and he'd walk out there and buy food, and you could hear people talking and you know, that type of thing. But and that actually was probably one of the very first podcasts I've ever listened to, was the Catholic Insider, and I really, really enjoy that podcast, and I try not to miss that one for sure.
All right, it's quiz time. You gave me these answers prior to our recording. You gave me several names. Now I'm going to put the question with the name, and you have to give me the an answer. If the following people were computers, what kind would they be and why? Are you ready for this? As he quickly thinks over the
okay,
names
sure,
he gave
yes.
me.
Yes, right. Okay, let's see.
First name, George Bush.
Probably a VIC-20.
Why?
I'm mainly thinking of him just from his speaking ability, quite slow and not too quick on his feet, but a nice guy.
Nice computer.
Nice computer.
Good keyboard layout.
Yeah, good, yeah.
Second one, Gallagher. As in the comedian.
Oh, okay. That would be a Mac.
I'm not sure I could place him with a computer, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, that's only because I don't really like the Mac, but that's okay. So kind of a, it fits the whole humor thing. Not that I don't like a Mac, it's just I haven't spent enough time with it, but I may like the Mac now that the voiceover is available. But
all right.
Let's see.
Next one, Goldie Hawn.
Oh, wow. Hmm. An Amiga. Now, the reason for this is because I really find her to be a very actress, although she hasn't really produced much lately. But in the movies that I've seen her in, I've really, really enjoyed them. And the Amiga really was, before Commodore killed it. was really a machine really developed for artists and that type of thing. I think that's why I'd pick that.
Okay. Good answer.
Yeah.
All right. For the musician, you pick Jeff Wayne. What kind of computer and why?
Hmm. Let's see. I think I would also pick a Mac for him. Fabulous artist. And, of course, the Mac is really used for a lot of audiophile and production type work. And I think that's why I'd pick that.
And I asked for a comic or cartoon character. You picked Bugs Bunny.
Hmm. Let's see. I think I would go with. I think I'd go with the Commodore 64 for that, mainly because Bugs Bunny kind of reminds me of fun and games and brings me back to my childhood, of being able to play a lot of the stuff that was on the Commodore and all the text adventure games and that type of thing. I think that's why I'd pick that.
And finally, I asked for somebody you work with. You gave me the name Kevin. First, tell me a little bit about Kevin, and then what kind of computer you would slap him with.
Kevin is a really wonderful guy at work. He's definitely a family guy, too, and a real sharp technical guy. I think I'd probably say probably a PC, kind of similar to me. He and I work very, very closely together on the projects that we're working on at the university, and I'd probably say high-end PC, like a nice real fast AMD machine, cheaper.
All right, give them a plug for the webpage and the show one more time. Where can they find you?
All right, you can find me at www.jeffbishop.net and take a listen to the Desert Skies podcast.
Thank you very much, Jeff. It's been great chatting with you, and I look forward to the next installment of the Desert Skies podcast.
Thanks, Chuck.
Take care. If you are a podcaster, or you listen to a podcast and are interested in hearing from your host or hostess, or both, get in touch with me at chuck@chuckchat.com. There's also a listener line, 206-222-CHAT, that's 206-222-2428, or you can reach me on Skype at chuck.tomasi, that's T-O-M-A-S-I. I also have two other shows, Chuck Chat Technorama, with my co-host Craig Stepp, done Sundays and Wednesdays when we talk about tech, science, and all things geek. There is also Chuck Chat Freestyle, which is more of an audio blog with all things family, fun, news, reviews, and interviews like this. All of this and more can be found at www.chuckchat.com. As always, thank you for listening.